Okay, folks, coming up on today's show, all good stuff. All good stuff. We talk about rookies, rookie hazing, what's happening these days with it. Russ has got some great stories there. Incredible moment with Gordie Howe, who took a rookie aside. Love that. Russ got called out as a player. Oh, yeah. And he's called out other players. Here's something you didn't know about Russ Courtnell. He wore girls' skates. Yes, you're going to hear about that. And some players who tried to break curfew but got caught. All that and much more coming up on The Suspendables. Well, here we go, folks. Another episode of The Suspendables. It's probably a household podcast by now, I would think, Russ.
Most definitely.
Yeah, with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and Russ Courtnell. This is our 14th show, bringing to you all amazing things. You know, Russ, the topics we cover are all encompassing, and I'm sure they're helping everyone through their day. Here's the snag, Russ. Okay, we're out of the shoot really well, and yeah. Batul is our girl, who's the marketing woman.
Genius, absolute genius.
And Chris and Danielle are the tech people, so we're nowhere without them. And Batul gave us a little update a few weeks ago that we're well over 30,000 listeners, you know, so I was all excited. I'm like, oh, God, wow, here we go. So I emailed her about 5 days ago saying, hey, what are the numbers? Are they still increasing? Haven't heard a word, Russ.
Cricket.
I don't know where we're at.
We've had historic crashes in the stock market. Maybe the suspendables had a crash.
Maybe it's gone in the tank. I don't know. Geez. We'll have to find out. So, Rusty, as I come on today, we record this on Sunday evenings. We put it up in the next day or two. The talk of the country is Bianca Andreescu, who won the U.S. Open, 19-year-old Canadian, who was female, of course, who was nowhere a year ago, something like 198th in the world, injury riddled, struggling young tennis player, and boom, 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 a year later, the U.S. Open champion, and the country's freaking out, Russ. They're freaking out.
Oh, my God.
Did you watch it? Did you get to see it?
I did. I watched it up here at Gosser and in Idaho, and I was sitting with some tennis people, and I was watching it because the Canadian was playing, and it was really exciting to watch and for her to beat Serena. I mean, yeah. Wow, what a you know, she just didn't beat anybody. She beat one of the best players of all time, so good for her.
You know, I was so excited. Like, I'm trying to think the last time I jumped around my living room watching a sporting event and swearing at the TV and drilling darts back one after another, lighting them one off the other. I think was probably the Raptors win when Kawhi Leonard hit the buzzer beater in the semis in game seven. And so the talk now is, Russ, I want you to think about it, is what is the greatest Canadian sports memory? Well, you know, of all time. This is obviously the most recent. It happened yesterday. And there's a bunch of stuff, you know, that it's pretty interesting that people are weighing in on what they think is one of the all-time greatest moments how do you nail it? So when I ask you that, what do you think of right away?
72 series, Russia, Canada.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was in second grade, and they played they let us watch the games in school.
Yeah,
I mean the place was unreal for me as a kid. It was phenomenal, and everybody was talking about it. And it was I think it brings the country together when we have a Canadian champion on a world stage. So This is great. Great, the Raptors was great this year. Mike Weir's win.
Yeah,
the Masters was great. You know, all the, you know, when Mike Weir won the Masters, he phoned Gretz and said, "Gretz, they ran out of Molson Canadian in the clubhouse."
I've talked about this, and the Canada-Russia series has been around for a long time. The only snag I have with it, Russ, when I think of these Canadian moments, the qualifier that I look at is what put Canada on the map? You know, what was significant, what stood out? Definitely Mike Weir. The thing about the Russia series, Russ, it was an exhibition. It was only against one other team. You know, it would have, whether Canada won or lost, would it have changed anything? So I'm always going, meh, I don't know.
Huh? You're a downer. Oh my gosh.
I got your gray
suit on again today?
Yeah, I must.
Oh
yeah,
my God.
Anyway, there's a million. The Jays, of course, winning back-to-back World Series.
Oh yeah, that was special. That was really special.
The 2010, you know, there's Olympic moments galore.
You know, regardless, I don't think you can ever rate one better than the other. But when somebody or a team does something like this, it's definitely great for our small country. I mean,
sure. What do you think lies ahead for this girl now, Russ, if you can put into perspective?
Cha-ching.
I'm waiting for this sort of fatherly take of yours going, the kid's going to have to get things under control. She's got a lifetime of pressure and stress ahead. Yeah, she picks up $2 million.
Yeah.
For the victory.
Take three, take four, take two. She's going to be shooting a lot of commercials in Canada right now.
What do you think she'll make, Russ, if you have to guess?
No clue. I would assume she's going to make millions. But, you know, Canada's a much smaller market than the U.S., so if she was in the U.S., she'd probably make a lot more money. But she's going to do well. Think of her competition in the tennis world in Canada.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Jeannie Bouchard's sort of fading out. And well, the thing about tennis, you know, when you brought up Wayne's name and – he was such a loyal guy, you know, when he started out. He stayed with his agent, a guy named Mike Barnett, who we all know, a great, wonderful guy. And a lot of people were knocking on the door when they realized who Wayne was going to be. A lot of other marketing companies and agencies who said, look it, man, you could take this game because of your stature and you could go international. You know, this thing can go to Europe and Asia and all that stuff. And, probably he would never say it, but he probably ended up leaving a lot of money on the table all those years because he remained loyal to Mike. You know, the thing about tennis is it's got this world appeal, right, for this kid. So
I can't wait to be at dinner the next time we're all together and Barney's going to be giving you fucking death stares. When he hears you just said that, he will never, ever forgive you.
Have you ever, Russ, I set up a guy one time to sort of embarrass him, you know, it's sort of like the raw side. And I know you've done this too. And so what I did was we were all in Florida, me and a bunch of guys golfing, and Gretz was down there doing a deal in Tampa and we were in Sarasota. And he said, well, come on up. I'm doing a deal with Budweiser tonight. And we said, okay. And Barnett was there and we're all in this van together. And I knew that this guy, he was a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. And he just couldn't get over that we were hanging out with Wayne, but he was a rabid fan, longtime season ticket holder, and he hated Matt Sundin. Okay, he hated the guy, and I knew that, but I also knew that Barney was Sundin's agent.
Oh no!
So I set the guy up in the van. You know, we were all drunk. Yeah. We were heading home from the bar, and I go, Gordy. What do you think of Matt Sundin? And the guy begins to, Barney's in the back and Gretz is giving me a shot in the back of the head. And this guy goes, they should bury that guy. And then of course hit him with the, well, you should ask Mike. He's his agent. You know?
Oh so, no.
I don't know if you've ever done it.
Mike would have been fuming.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen anyone get embarrassed like that, whether you've been involved in it or anything.
Of course.
Anyway, Cool story. Great story. I'm sure her life has changed and all the sponsors will be knocking on the door. And tennis was kind of on the map already a little bit with Ronich and a few other guys. And Shapovalov is doing great. He made it through a couple rounds or second round anyway. I think he lost, but all good stuff. So
good for them.
So here's the deal, Russ. A bunch of stuff starting up, you know, the NFL.
The Vikings won today.
Is it your daughter's and boyfriend no, plays yeah,
exactly. Eric Kendricks and my daughter have been together about 5-6 years now from UCLA days.
Right.
They met there and they won their first game. They played really well. And I watched it at the clubhouse. And I came back to I'm renting this apartment at Gosser and for the summer.
Right.
So yeah, it's really nice. It's been redone and I don't spend a lot of time in here, but the weather's cooling off. I said, I'm gonna watch football.
Right.
They got DirecTV. They didn't purchase one frickin' channel.
Oh no.
Even like the lower channels, I'm like, I go, okay, it's got to be on NBC, right? We're sorry for the inconvenience, but you did not purchase this channel. So fuck, I went down to the Lake Club there and watched a couple of the games, or not. I watched a half of one of the games and then came back for the show.
You've got a lot of options. So it's the first week of the NFL. The night game coming up shortly is the New England Patriots are playing the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
And so keeping to the same theme here about great sports moments and all-time significant achievements in sports. Tom Brady.
Oh, my God. What a awesome athlete.
And Bill Belichick. Know you're just slightly better than a peripheral fan of the NFL.
Yeah.
Has Belichick now, has he eclipsed all these other guys like Vince Lombardi and, as the gold standard for football coaches? How do you look at it?
I mean, like you said, I'm no expert, but I would have to say yes. I mean, the guy is just, he's so good, and he just changes. He can change it doesn't matter who he brings in, what players, if they play the same way and they freaking win. And I know people that get tired of that after a while, but you got to be rooting for Brady now that he's, what is he, 41 or 42?
Right in there somewhere.
Yeah. Good Discovery member. He's got five, I think he's got four or five places at Discovery clubs around the.
Oh, does he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's not hurting.
Yeah, he's not hurting.
He listed his house in Boston, and I was like, I kept reading down. Yeah, it was like 39 or 49 million.
Jesus.
Yeah. That's what I said.
If I'm paying that, they better throw in the New England Patriots as part of the deal.
Yeah.
So listen, Rusty, I noticed driving home yesterday through my neighborhood that they're starting to, if you can believe it, it's September 8th or 9th, whatever it is. The guy was putting up rink boards. For the outdoor rink.
Oh no, that just set you to the moon.
Well, I was going, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. Obviously they'd like to get them up before the snow flies. I went,
was that after your golf date that you drove back?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I played with a 90-year-old woman this week.
Yeah, Alex. I saw that on Instagram.
Isn't she incredible?
You found your wheelhouse.
I did. Yeah. I had to, I can only, listen, if 75.
What'd you say, Jim? Huh?
Yeah. If 75's on the table, Russ, I'll take it. Okay. Yeah. If 75. But she just clips it down the middle, straight. She's, are we taking a cart or not? I said, fuck, she's 90 years old.
Oh my God. Taking a cart. So what's the date?
I said, I am, but you can walk and step on it. Okay. Yeah, Try and keep up.
Hurry up.
It was quite a treat and kind of amazing. The softer side of me came out going, this is incredible.
That's lady nice. Did that.
Talking about the rink boards, Russ, starting up in training camps. I'm thinking of, maybe you got some memories, Russ, when you were a kid, because you're a little younger than I am. But when I played peewee hockey, we dressed at home, put everything at home, put our skidoo boots on, we called them, and threw the skates over the blade of the stick, threw it over the shoulder, and walked down to the rink.
Yeah.
And I remember some of those days, and one of my greatest memories was my buddy's father, who was the coach, and of course everyone's volunteering and everybody knows each other in the hood.
Yeah.
And some kids are showing up for games and some aren't, So he calls a practice and there were no indoor rinks then for us to practice on, in the
This is in Ottawa, right?
This is in Sudbury, my hometown.
Sudbury.
And, Anyway, and one of the most hilarious things I've ever seen, he calls us all in and we're sitting down, and it was a, we had a clubhouse, Russ, where they, it was like a stove, like a, you had to add wood into it. I feel like I'm 1,000 years old.
Oh,
and
God.
We're all sitting in there and he's starting to give a shit. Okay. He said, listen, you kids signed up for this. Okay. And we only play twice a week. We play a weekday night and we play Saturdays. And some of you aren't showing up, you know?
Yeah.
And we're all sitting there. He's kind of yelling at us. And he says, you got to make a decision. Okay. If you want to, do you want to play hockey on Saturday mornings or do you want to stay home and watch cartoons? And, okay. And two guys got up and walked out saying, cartoons. anyway.
I don't think you guys won a lot of games.
No, we didn't.
Just guessing.
Anyway, I laugh my head off when I think about it. How about you, Rusty, back in your day as a, when your, when are your first memories of you playing hockey?
When I was, I remember, I got some, skates. My dad wouldn't give us, I got hand-me-down figure skates, believe it or not, from my sister. So I started to learn to skate and then I started playing hockey soon after. I started playing when I was, I think, 5.
Right.
And, we would play, or after we go to school for half a day and then we played in the afternoon at Memorial Arena.
Where right.
The Victoria Cougars played. And we were the Maple Buds. So they had home and away Maple Leaf uniforms. And so you'd go down there, helmet, stick, gloves, you know, skates, maybe shin pads. I think.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
And we'd just play boards to boards. And that was, that's how I learned how to play hockey. And then from there, I went up to, I moved to another rink and really, it took off from there. Got really serious about it when I was 7. I was really serious.
You probably got serious about it when you got your first pair of men's skates.
Yeah, exactly.
Your first pair, were they figure skates?
Yeah, and my freaking dad wouldn't paint them black. So I was skating around at public skating with figure skates on. It was so embarrassing. No. Yeah, it was embarrassing. And then eventually I got a pair of hand-me-down hockey skates and yeah, never got my, I probably said this on the show before, but my first pair of brand new hockey skates was when I made the Victoria Cougars when I was 17. Cause I always got the secondhand pair. My dad would take us into Ray's Sporting Goods in Victoria and we go to the back pile and he would dig around till he found some kid skate who probably wanted to watch cartoons and never used the skate.
Right.
And never, right. You know, and then quit hockey after a year. And he was magical at finding me these almost brand new skates. And he goes, son, they're already broken in and they're half price.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You hit you between the eyes.
Yeah
sure. Yeah. Getting your first pair of skates, though. I mean, it was like getting your first new bike.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
good. Yeah.
My, because the oldest pair of skates I can remember, my dad gave me his and they were tube blades, you know, the tube yeah. blade. And they were, he didn't even call them tacks. They were tackaberries.
Oh, tackaberries.
Tackaberries, the full name for tacks. And every kid had a pair of tacks. And I had these first pair of tacks that I went, you know, that I got. So great memories anyway, as a kid growing up. Go ahead.
Well, back to talking about memories. While I'm sitting here, Eric Kendricks just texted me.
Yeah,
and he said, my friend,
who's Eric Kendricks now? You got a
number 54 for the Minnesota Vikings. The one, you know.
Oh, your son? Yeah, your son-in-law or boyfriend-in-law.
Boyfriend, they got to get married to be a son-in-law.
Right.
So anyways, he just texted me and he said, my friend Anthony Harris was in my class practice squad at UCLA. Now he had 2 picks in the game. How cool is that? I was watching him, and I was thinking, geez, this kid, he looks familiar. So, you know, kids out there, they shouldn't give up, you know, even if you're not playing on the top squad.
Yeah.
This guy had 2 picks in his NFL game today, so there you go.
There's a lot of guys. There's a lot of great stories, Russ, in the NHL where guys and athletes in general who were told, you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to make it, and in hockey, the guys I think of, you know, Theo Fleury was a guy. I think I think Dennis Savard has a story or two where he got cut. And did any of that ever happen to you? That you got that,
No.
You were good all the way?
I actually never was cut. My last year, I didn't get signed. That was kind of it. When I retired, I just ran out of time. But I was lucky. I worked hard, but I had some talent, so it helped. My brother Jeff, on the other hand, he has that story of, played on the B team 1 year and Bantam B first year and then Bantam A the second year and Midget B, whatever, and then wasn't drafted and then ended up almost scoring 400 goals. So he has
great story.
Yeah. So I was I was picked in the first round and he wasn't drafted and we both, had long careers and good careers.
Fantastic. Rusty, we've talked about it before. You've told some great stories. So rookies, they come into the league, the NHL, there's been some fantastic stories. The tradition was hazing.
Yeah.
It's not very popular anymore, but I know we talked about that a few shows ago.
Yeah.
Of what guys tried to do to you, shave your balls and all that shit. And so that time of year is coming again. But one of the things they always did was rookie dinners, Russ. And explain to me what that tradition is.
So it started midway through my career. They stopped the hazing. And it was because the guys looked horrific. They looked like they were chemotherapy patients. I mean, guys were shaved and anyway, yeah, so
all right.
It shaved everywhere. But it just was, it was ignorant. It really was. And anyways, they stopped it. So the veterans said, okay, well, these guys got to do something. So the rookie dinner.
They're not getting away with this.
Yeah. The rookie dinner was started. And one of the first ones I was at was Montreal Canadiens. And it was at the Salmon House on the Hill in Vancouver. And it was an excellent dinner until I told the story how Lyle Odelin, who was a rookie, went under the table and shoe checked Denny Savard and that whole story. We've already talked about that. But the dinners, I think the most expensive dinner that I was part of was $22,000, and it was up in Whistler at Aroxia, and I was playing for the Dallas Stars.
Right.
Yeah, and this was before the big contracts really started rolling in like today.
So the rookies have to pay for it. That's the deal, right?
It doesn't matter if there's one or six. It's a rookie dinner and the rookie's paying. So you want to make sure you're on a team that there's going to be a lot of rookies at the dinner.
Sure, sure.
And then what they do, this is what I was told, I heard after I retired, is that say you're a rookie and you're in Chicago, and you buy the dinner and you get traded to another team and you're still a rookie, the kid brings the receipt from the dinner. You keep that receipt and you show them, I've already bought my rookie dinner.
I've already gone off for $20K.
Yeah, yeah. You can't get a guy twice even.
Yeah, right. Did you have to pay? Did you do it? How did it?
No, I got shaved.
Oh, look.
Yeah, I got
shit. I might pay the 20 grand.
Yeah.
I might. No. Anyway, it's, there's others. I think the NFL, they have a tradition. The guy's got to do a play or something, or do skits or something like that.
Eric had to buy dinner. He went out for dinner with the other defensive guys. And there was like 8 or 10 of them. And they all got up and walked out and said, rookie, this is your rookie dinner. Right. So he had to buy dinner, and I don't know if they made him do other stuff, but I know he bought dinner for those guys. But I think every team is probably different. Who knows?
Right. So tell us this, Russ. The start of the season, what young athletes, they're going to go through training camp here, and some of them are fighting for a spot, fighting to either keep a spot or get a spot or not get sent down or whatever. But those who do, Russ, in their first year, when you can remember the first year you played in the league, what surprised you, Russ? What did things that you didn't expect when you became the first year you were a pro athlete playing in the NHL. When you think back to those days, try and tell us guppies who would never had a shot at playing any professional sport what that was like for you. The first day you came in and you knew you were going to be on the team.
I felt like a boy amongst men. You know, guys were had beards and shaven, and I barely had a hair on my body, and I was like 174 pounds or something at the time, and I felt like a boy playing with and against men, and and that lasted for me for about 5-6 years that I felt really young. You know,
no way.
Yeah, it did. I felt more comfortable every year, but I still felt like, you know, by the time I at the peak of my career, I was about 188. 188.
Jesus.
So I from my first year, I gained 18 pounds and probably grew another half inch or something like that. So I was, I wasn't like some of these guys that are just full grown at 18. So that was the biggest thing. And then just learning the ropes, you know, going on the road and freaking, you know, running out of money. I didn't have a debit card, and it was weird. Like learning as you go, but you manage through, and it was fun, man. It was so exciting.
Yeah,
going into these rinks, I'd never been in any of these arenas that I played in. You know, I've lived in Victoria, British Columbia. I think my first, I went to one pro game or the, I went to one. I think yeah, I went to one pro game before I turned pro. And so all these new experiences, when you grow up, you play in the same arenas pretty much all the time.
Sure.
But it's a great feeling and a great accomplishment because you, I haven't even been drinking today and I can't.
I was going to say, boy, it sounds like you're a little tipsy. Yeah, it's
no,
nice.
No tipsy today.
So Russ, I would just expect when you say you sort of felt isolated for 4 or 5 years in the NHL, you'd think a veteran would sort of look after you. That's the way I always understood
well,
it.
Well, I didn't mean that. If I said isolated, I didn't mean isolated. I just felt.
No, you didn't say that. I just.
But, yeah, you did. It just was a learning process, a growing process, and catching up to the guys around you. You know, just trying to get stronger, trying to get smarter, and there's older guys. So what's going to happen now? There's going to be some veterans,
right?
That don't want the young guys to take their jobs. And so that's the hard part. You come in and there's these older guys on the team and they're kind of trying to be nice, but they're not because they know that you're probably there to take their spot if they have a really good camp.
Right.
So that's the hard part when you're young and impressionable that you don't have a teammate, you know, that. Once you make the team, the guys are great. But until you make the team, they can be a bit. It can be a bit tough. Some guys can be assholes, but they're trying to protect their jobs because they know they're on their way out.
Kelly Chase, of course, now the longtime color guy for the Blues and played for St. Louis, and of course they're having a hell of a year. You know, they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
He tells an amazing story. I think Bobby Hull had come into town.
Gordie Howe.
Well, the story I understood was when they went back to the hotel room.
Do you want me to tell the story?
Go ahead. Okay. And if it's, I got a different one. Okay.
So, let's hear it. Kelly Chase is a rookie. He's going to Hartford's training camp. He's at the airport and Mr. Hockey's going to Hartford also because he still worked for the team. Gordie right. Howe. So they get on the plane, they fly, or he went over to him and said, Mr. Howe, my name's Kelly Chase. I'm from Saskatoon and I'm going to Hartford's training camp. And he goes, oh, sit down and let's talk. And so they talk and where are you from? What did you do? Da-da-da, what's your parents and all that. And then they get on the plane and they fly somewhere, maybe Chicago or somewhere. They get stuck. They say, sorry, this flight's been canceled. We'll reschedule you for tomorrow morning. Come up and get a hotel voucher. So they go up to the counter. He goes, kid, you're rooming with me tonight. So here's this kid from Saskatoon, 19 years old, and Gordie Howe sharing a room together on the road. And he goes, put your bags in a room, and then let's go downstairs and have a steak. So they go downstairs and he starts talking about training camp. And he says, look, kid, when you go to these camps, because you're not drafted, you gotta really impress them. So if you're a scorer, you got to score. If you're a fighter, you got to fight. If you're a hitter, you got to hit. If you're a checker, you got to check. Whatever you do, you have to do something so they never forget you. They're like, hey, that kid over there, he's really tough. So he goes out and he beats the shit out of a veteran.
Yeah.
Mistake for you rookies out there. Don't beat up another rookie. Don't beat up a veteran.
Gordy, you never told me I couldn't do that.
So the next next shift, he goes out there and he's not looking. And Dana Mirzin sucker punches him, beats the shit out of him. And they don't put him. They don't put Chaser back out on the ice because they can see that the veterans are just going to kill him, right? So he's sitting at the end of the bench, and he's like, oh, my God, I freaking screwed up. You know, Gordie Howe told me to, you know, to go out and do my best. So Dana, that was back when they did two-a-days, and so they cleaned the ice halfway through, and Dana Mercer's leaning on the net,
right?
And he doesn't see Chaser. Chaser comes up behind him and breaks his stick over his head then beats the shit out of him. So then after the game, they come out, everybody breaks it up. They're all telling F you, rookie this, rookie that. They all hate him. So he goes into the showers and he goes, everyone's looking at him like, you little bastard, you know, fuck you, you know, and no one's talking to him. Nobody. Right. So he goes out to get on the bus to go back to the hotel.
Yeah.
And Gordie Howe walks up and goes, waits for him at the front door of the bus. And just so every veteran could see that Gordie Howe was talking to him, and he put his arm around him, hugged him and said, kid, they'll never forget you now. Next day, his son, one of the Howe brothers phoned up Chaser, and they all took him fishing or they went out for lobster or something like that. And then from that moment on, all the guys treated him great. But that's the Gordie Howe Kelly Chase story.
Fantastic. Yeah. The other the one I was thinking of was Bobby Hull.
Okay. Who,
that Chaser, I think he came to Brett was playing in St. Louis, I guess. And it was Chaser on that team at the same time?
They're best friends.
And Chaser, by the way, Kelly Chase is very funny. He's a great dinner speaker and he's a hilarious guy and he's a great storyteller. And he was talking about Bobby Hull coming to the hotel. And Bobby doesn't mind having the odd drink still. Yeah. He'll tell you that. You know, he is a world-class drinker, man.
Yeah. He's a plus three.
He's a plus. He is. Yeah. Yeah, he is. He breaks par every time. Okay. They were walking to, you know, they went out and had a few. They were pretty lit up coming back to the hotel. And Bobby he was cheap. He didn't want to get his own room. He was staying with Chaser and Brett in the room, as the story goes. And they were on the sixth floor or something. And they got in the elevator and Bobby knew they were on the sixth and he pushes the third floor. And, you know, it's one or two in the morning. And
oh my God.
Chaser's going, what are you doing? You know, he goes, come with me. And he gets off the elevator and starts to walk down the hallway and grab all the food that people have left from room service outside of their door, you know, sitting there going, grab a sandwich, you know, and started eating all this food. You know?
My God.
It's crazy shit, man. That
he and Stan Mikita used to do that after they come in when they played and they'd come in after the bars on the road. They would do the hall room service and they'd go up and down the hallway picking up food off the freaking trays that people put out. And then they'd meet back in their room and go, what'd you get? Oh, I got half a pizza. Oh my God.
You can't write it, man. Yeah.
Every time I hear that, I just get so grossed out. I'm like,
God. No kidding, man. Jesus. Yeah. One of the other, you can think of some more, but one of the other great stories was the great one's roommate. I think when he first came to L, it might've been, was Ace Bailey? Did he play for Edmonton way back in the day? Not LA.
100%.
Yeah. And he was Wayne's roommate. And there's some great stories about guys breaking curfew, you know, and how to sneak in the hotel and stuff when the coach called a curfew for 11 o'clock, you know, and Slats called curfew and seldom checked, you know, seldom checked. And but I think the greatest trick I ever heard by a coach, so he didn't have to, you know, go check on everyone at 11. You know, that was a pain in the ass for the coach, but he told everyone, you got to be back in your room at 11.
Yeah.
So he would send a kid, sit him in the lobby, Russ, I think, with a hockey stick.
Yeah.
And tell him, get all the signatures of the guys when they come in the hotel.
Yeah.
Know? And then Slats would check the stick the next day.
Yeah, the next day. Go,
where's Mess's autograph? It's not on here, you know? So anyway, Gretz tells this hilarious story how they were kind of late. It was after curfew and they go flying into their room. And Gretz said he learned from the veterans, you know, like if you're late, they might be looking for you, is immediately drop your gear and get right into bed.
Yeah.
You know, because the coach might be there in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And Ace was farting around. You know, he had the full suit on, three-piece suits back then, trench coat. And he's pissing around in the room. And Gretz, you know, gets down to his skivvies, jumps into bed. Ace is, you know, sort of floating around the room. And there's a knock at the door, right? It's Slats.
Yeah.
And Bailey just immediately rips into under the covers with all his shit on, you know, and pulls the covers straight up to his neck, right? And holds them there. And he's got his shoes on and everything, right? And Slats walks in the room and Gretz is going, hey, Slats, what's up? He's going, I'm just checking on you guys, you know. And he sits on the foot of the bed, right, of Ace's. And he's looking at him going, what's with you? What's with all the covers up? And Ace is going, pretending he's quivering, shaking, goes, ah, I got a fever, Slats. I got a fever. And Slats knows what's going on. Right? Yeah. He knows what's going on. And he stands up and says, well, you know what the best thing if you're getting the flu or a fever is you got to crank the heat in the hotel room. And they have these old radio, and he fucking fires it up to 100. And then he sits down to talk again, right? Well, he's going on, and so, Gretz, what do you think about tomorrow? And, you know, who should I put on your line and all this shit? And how are you? In the meantime, Ace is in underneath the covers. The room is sweltering, okay? It's absolutely sweltering. He stays half an hour. And Ace, the sweat is pouring down his face, and Slats. And then finally, you know, Slats is kind of laughing, and Gretz is trying to hold it together. Oh, and Ace just throws the covers back, goes, I broke curfew! I broke curfew! I can't take it.
Ace Bailey, unfortunately, was a passenger in one of the planes that hit the towers in 9/11. And we lost a good one, lost a lot of people, but we personally know Ace, and it's just terrible. But some of the stories, like he was a prankster, so he was scouting, and they're in Toronto at one of these hotel rooms where he's, I don't know what floor he's on.
Right.
He opened the window and he ran. He goes, I can't take it anymore. And he ran and jumped out the window like he's committing suicide. And the
Jesus,
guy, and all the guys come run into the windows. Well, he jumped too hard, too far, and he went over the side and he's hanging by his fingertips. He goes, pull me up, you assholes. I was just kidding. Pull me up. And Jesus, man. Another story, when he was a rookie in Boston, I think it was Harry Sinden was the coach, and he had it was 3-3 or something, they're losing 3-0 or 5-0, and he said, get out there, and he hadn't played the whole game, and he had untied his skates, and he said, coach, you want me to win it or tie it? And they sent him to the minors the next day. I think I've told that story on the show before.
No, you haven't. No, you haven't.
Apologies if I have. I mean, I it's funny when I tell a couple of these stories, I'm like, I think I might have told this story already.
Oh, but welcome to my world.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Sorry, folks, if Pete and repeat sometimes we.
Yeah. If you don't know hockey, one of the sort of standard plays, and this has to do with Paul Coffey playing a joke on a kid who came into camp, a rookie. So when you, what they call cycling the puck, Russ, right? It gets dumped in and so the two defensemen would be in the corners and sort of firing the puck back and forth. Is that what they call cycling? Where they're sort of whipping it back and forth
and whatever.
Well, yeah, two defensemen would do this chore, you know? And Koff tells the rookie, right? He says, look, if you really want to impress the coaches, okay, you cover both corners, okay, when they're shooting the puck back and forth. And the kid was fucking exhausted, you know, trying to run back and forth like a maniac, you know. But the poor rookies, Russ. They get sort of slaughtered.
Yeah,
when they're coming into camp. So, okay, Rusty. Before we go, Antonio Brown's been in the news. NFLer who has just been a complete and utter knob with his team. They were talking about bringing out a new helmet, and he's a superstar receiver, right? And he said, I don't want the helmet. You know, and he kicked up a stink, and then he ended up getting fined. He ended up he didn't show up for practice. He had a run-in with the GM or the coach, and they fined him again. And the guy, they got rid of him.
Yeah.
They traded him away. It was like, I don't know how much money they left on the table there, $30 million or something like that.
He did.
Yeah. So, the guy, I want to ask you, Russ, about, because it is a reality in sports that you're going to have superstars on your team who are much more talented, much more skilled. They get paid way more money. And yet we end up seeing these problems with some of these prima donnas coming in. And I wonder if there's a way to handle them, Russ. This thing just got out of control with this guy, and they lost, complete control of it. The team did. But you've played on sports, Russ, where there's guys on your team who are, and you were a good player, who were stars on the team. And how should that be handled? If some of these guys step up and go, hey, fuck, I want my own room, for example, instead of a roommate or something.
Yeah, well, the NHL players now, after a certain amount of games, they do get their own room after they've played. And I was talking about it this summer with some of the guys that live up here at Gosser in the summer, and the older guys especially. And when you went on the road, it was really nice to have a roommate, someone to talk to or watch TV with, hang out, And I wouldn't want to be on the road by myself. I just think that's part of being a teammate, is getting to know your buddy and getting to know each other. And that's where you can have, private conversations, right? Like stuff going on in your personal life or your team life or whatever. And that's where the bonds created a stronger bond with a teammate and friendship. Yeah. I don't get that, but this guy is out of control. I mean, he's making demands. He's causing, we're all talking about it in the media. It's all every day in the media. So he's obviously disrupting the locker room. So that's not a good thing.
So what do you do, Russ? If a guy, say on a hockey team, if a guy comes in and say you lose a game or something, and one of the stars, goes off on the rest of the team, you've heard it happen before. So a player will, the team's in the tank, they're supposed to be winning games, they're not, and they've lost. They'll go to interview the captain or the star, and every so often, the guy in the interview will call out other players on the team. You don't hear it very often, but they'll say, I'll tell you what, there are a lot of guys on this team who got to get their shit together.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, Russ, I mean, it's sort of taboo to go public and ever call out the rest of your team, but it does happen.
Well,
what do you do about that?
I think when I've seen that happen, I've only seen it once or twice where I didn't like what the player said, but most of the time the player is calling out the entire team, and they usually say, including myself, we got to be better. That's embarrassing. And he's letting the public know through the media that the team is not happy with their play and they've got to play better. They've got to be better. They got to work harder and all that stuff. But guys call out other a player individually. That's crossing the line. You can do it in the locker room in front of your teammates, but you wouldn't do it through, if you don't have the balls to go up to a guy and say, hey, you freaking, you're way better than this. You're not doing this right. You're not doing that right. You suck. That takes a lot of balls, but to do that in the media is gutless.
Have you ever been in that situation, Russ, where you either had to call out a guy or someone called you out?
I got called out by Mark Tenorti because he was the captain of our team, and I disagreed with Shane Chirla in between periods, and I said it's bullshit. You can't, that's not right. And I whatever he was saying, I disagreed with. And after the game, Mark Tenorti, who's a big human being, comes over. He goes, Russ, I'm not going to say whether I agree with you or disagree with what you said to Churls, but he's a captain of our team, and you can't do that in front of the team. You embarrassed him. And right. So I went over and I apologized to him. I said, you know, I'm your buddy. And he goes, that was the hard part, Russ. You are my buddy. And so it was pretty emotional. He's an emotional guy. And then one other time, Neil Broughton said to me on the bench, I didn't get the puck in or something. And I love Neil. I love playing with him. I love him to this day. Right. And I didn't get the puck deep or something. And got back to the bench. He leaned over and Russ. And I looked over and he goes, get the fucking puck in. That's got to go in. And I'm just like, whoa. It was like a shot to the stomach. I'm like, oh my God. Right. I love Neil. I can't believe I made him upset. Now, normally a coach would say that to you, not your own teammate. But
right.
I got it in the next time.
Sure, sure.
So yeah, those are a couple times where it's happened to me, you know, where I didn't do something right. I got called out. I called out another guy and then they didn't like it. So,
right.
It happens.
Tell us, Russ, so during a hockey game, I guess it would depend whether you're up or down after a period. So off the ice you go, it's the end of the period and the team files into the locker room. We've never been privy as a fan or spectator to ever see what goes on inside the locker room during a period break. What generally happens, Russ, when the intermission's on and the team goes, is there anything exciting that happens or, well, tell us.
No, not really. I mean, guys go in, some guys take their skates off, take your, upper gear off, your jersey. Yeah, get some more fluids in you, talk about, you know, what's going on in during that last period, maybe what they're doing right and we're doing wrong. Sometimes the coach will come in. They usually come in right before you go back on the ice and talks a little bit about the next period. But
yeah,
the guys are in there relaxing. You know, they're kicked back, relaxing, catching their breath, thinking about the period. A lot of guys take a washroom break. You know, can't take a leak while you're out on the bench, so you got to do it in between periods.
Right.
Because you're drinking a lot of fluid during the games, if you're playing a lot, unless you're riding the pine. But
back in the old days, Russ, when there was only, everyone was a Montreal Canadian fan, there's pictures of a bunch of guys smoking.
Oh, I left that part out. When I played in the 80s in Toronto, yep. we had six guys that smoked in between periods. And so you'd go in the can to take a leak.
Yeah, baby.
And you had to hold your breath because there was six guys smoking a dart like it was their last dart they were going to have. And Ally Afraidy would have two. The other guys would all just have one.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. Bob McGill back there. Jeff Brubaker was back there. Rick Vive was back. DeLego was back there. Ally Afraidy, Kenny Raggett would have a dart once in a while. I mean, frick, it was unbelievable how many guys in our team smoked.
Yeah. Guy Lafleur was the most popular, I think, in his day.
I think Guy smoked in the locker room. I don't think he had to go to the camp.
He could have done anything.
Denny Savard and Steve Larmer were notorious smokers. Denny has since quit, but when he played in Chicago, I guess he and Steve Larmer would smoke and Al Secord was their big winger and he sat between them apparently. And he had one of those electric fans and he would just hold it, blowing the smoke away.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Isn't that great? Yeah. No one ever thought, hey, don't smoke. How about that?
You know? Yeah. Well, now all the guys, they all chew. I mean, Jesus, there's so, oh my God. If you look down the interviews and that, these guys are all chewing. So
I think Esa-Tikkanen played with a chaw.
Yeah, he had one in.
Mark Bergevin is a guy that you really like. He's hilarious. I think he played with your brother. There's some hilarious stories about what he did as a roommate with your brother.
Yeah.
But I think your brother told me a great story where Bergevin wasn't playing that night for whatever reason. They might have been in a playoff game and they're down a couple of goals. Do you know that story?
Yeah, there's a few of them. But keep going.
So your brother's telling the story. They're exhausted. They're playing their ass off and playing their heart out. And they get in the room and they're down a couple of goals. And they're all sitting there with their head down and, just trying to catch their breath. dry off their equipment. And all of a sudden they hear, back in those days, you just had ghetto blasters, right? Yeah. No one had phones and Apple Music and all that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they hear the theme for Kung Fu Fighting.
Oh, Kung Fu Fighting. Yeah.
Right. Comes on. Everyone's Kung Fu Fighting. And next thing they look up going, what the fuck's going on? And Bergevin comes out of the showers wearing one of these big sumo costumes.
Yeah, and the blow up ones.
Yeah. And starts to perform a little karate action in the, and Jeff said, it just absolutely, everyone was pissing themselves laughing so much. And they went on to win the game, with this sort of lighthearted thing. So,
oh God, there's so many of those stories with Bergie.
Yeah.
He's great.
Okay, Rusty, we made her through another show. What are you doing the rest of the week? You got to start.
I got a couple weeks left here before I go back to LA. So I'm still in Idaho and I might play a couple rounds of golf this week. I'm just in a bad rut right now. I got to get out of it. But
golfing, you mean?
Yeah. I'm terrible. I'm terrible right now. I can't hit the ball.
Only you, Russ, you know, like anyone else's terrible rut would be, oh my God, I'm broke. I got to go to work. I can't make fucking money. I can't pay my mortgage. I'm in a rut. I can't break 90. All right, Rusty.
Hey, buddy.
Have a good week, my friend, and we'll talk to everybody. You've been listening to The Suspendables, and we'll be back at you next week. Holy Jesus, what happened?
We're not.
Use your ears.
Yeah, there we go. Let's leave that in. Russ wrecking the equipment. Okay, we'll talk to you later.
I tripped over the cord.
Okay. Let's get out of here before you blow the joint up.
Yeah.